A sheriff's deputy knocks at 1 p.m. By 1:30, your children's toys, your grandmother's photos, your winter coats, everything you own sits in a heap on the curb. Neighbors glance over, then quickly look away. This isn't a scene from a disaster movie. It's Tuesday afternoon in Milwaukee, where 16 families lose their homes every single day through formal eviction proceedings. Thousands more are forced out through informal pressure that leaves no paper trail. What was once shocking enough to draw crowds of angry protesters now barely registers as newsworthy. Eviction has become so routine in America's poorest neighborhoods that it's practically invisible, yet it's quietly destroying lives, shattering families, and perpetuating cycles of poverty that trap generations. This is the hidden crisis that Matthew Desmond spent years documenting, living alongside both landlords and tenants to understand how losing your home has transformed from a rare catastrophe into an ordinary fact of life for millions of Americans. Sharenna Tarver, a former teacher turned landlord, owns 36 rental units in Milwaukee's poorest neighborhoods. Her monthly income, around $10,000 after expenses, exceeds what most tenants earn annually. After the 2008 crash, investors like her bought foreclosed properties cheap while rents stayed high, recognizing that crisis creates millionaires. The economics are perverse. Despite broken windows, faulty plumbing, and pest infestations, rents in Milwaukee's poorest neighborhoods ran only $50 below the citywide median. Extreme housing shortages, racial segregation, and minimal rent control gave landlords pricing power with minimal upkeep. Complain about conditions? Risk eviction. Lamar, a double amputee Vietnam veteran, spent a week cleaning Sharenna's filthy basement to work off rent debt. She credited him $50 against his $260 debt, then refused credit when he repainted a vacant unit. Collecting rent from Terry, a mentally disabled woman on SSI, Sharenna accepted $1,400 in cash while Terry's boyfriend stood silently, face creased with humiliation. One side holds all the cards, the other holds none. In early 20th century America, eviction was rare enough that neighbors physically blocked marshals from removing families. Today, it's so common in poor communities, it barely draws notice. Milwaukee landlords evict roughly 16,000 adults and children annually, 16 families daily through court alone, not counting informal displacements. The consequences cascade devastatingly. Eviction causes job loss because maintaining employment becomes impossible amid sudden homelessness. Children switch schools mid-year, disrupting education. Communities never stabilize because residents can't form bonds. Most devastatingly, eviction creates a permanent record, making future housing exponentially harder. One crisis becomes a lifetime sentence. Milwaukee's eviction court processes cases with assembly line efficiency, 88 seconds on average when tenants don't appear, which happens 70% of the time. The few who show face overwhelm odds without lawyers while landlords have attorneys. The court asks one question: was rent paid? Whether apartments meet habitability standards rarely matters. The demographics reveal stark patterns. In Milwaukee's poorest Black neighborhoods, women face eviction at nearly twice the rate of men and nine times the rate of women from poor white neighborhoods. If incarceration defines poor Black men's lives, eviction shapes poor Black women's. This gap stems from women's lower earnings, single mother childcare costs, and fewer negotiation options. Men sometimes work off debts through maintenance, while women may face sexual propositions instead. Arlene Bell has spent 20 years seeking stable housing for herself and her sons. Despite once qualifying for housing assistance, she gave it up impulsively as a teenager and has paid for that decision ever since. When we meet her, she's just been evicted after spending rent money on a friend's funeral. With nowhere to go, she accepts shelter from Crystal, a stranger who'd come to view her apartment. This survival strategy, forming disposable ties with strangers, has become common among the poor as crack, mass incarceration, and punitive welfare policies have weakened traditional family safety nets. The arrangement quickly sours. When Crystal calls 911 to report domestic violence upstairs, Milwaukee's nuisance property ordinance penalizes Sharina for excessive emergency calls. She evicts both women. Poverty has turned potential allies into enemies. Arlene's housing search reveals brutal mathematics. She receives just $628 monthly in welfare benefits, unchanged since 1997, despite soaring housing costs. With median rent at $600, she must spend nearly everything on housing. After 89 rejections, she finally secures an apartment, but loses it weeks later when her son has behavioral problems. The children suffer profoundly. Jory attends 5 different schools in 2 years. When they find their abandoned cat, Arlene harshly pulls her younger son Jafaris away, forcing him to drop the animal. Though she privately cries for the cat, Arlene deliberately teaches her sons to love small, to reject what they could not have, a way to say, "No, I won't," instead of, "I'm sorry, I can't." Milwaukee remains one of America's most segregated cities, with the Menominee River Valley dividing the predominantly black North Side from the white South Side, a legacy of redlining that systematically denied black families homeownership. In 1967, when black demonstrators marched across the 16th Street Viaduct to protest housing discrimination, 13,000 hostile white protesters met them with objects and slurs. The march continued for 200 consecutive nights. Despite the 1968 Fair Housing Act, 90% of Milwaukee's African Americans still live on the North Side. This segregation creates starkly different experiences. Pam and Ned, a white couple with multiple evictions and criminal records, secure a clean 2-bedroom apartment by having Ned apply alone. Meanwhile, Arlene, a single black mother with no criminal record and fewer evictions, faces constant rejection. Property managers maintain racial homogeneity through subtle screening, telling minority applicants units are rented while showing them to white prospects. Housing discrimination against families with children compounds these disparities. Though illegal since 1988, landlords routinely reject families fearing property damage and liability. Families with children are almost 3 times more likely to receive eviction judgments. When evicted, families move to neighborhoods with higher poverty and crime, not by preference, but because eviction records leave few alternatives. These neighborhoods have test scores 20 percentage points lower and double the unemployment rates, perpetuating intergenerational poverty. America's housing assistance reveals stark contradictions. Housing choice vouchers effectively reduce poverty by capping rent at 30% of income, yet reach only 1/4 of eligible households. When Arlene applied to Milwaukee's waiting list, 3,500 families were already ahead. Then the list froze for years. Nationwide, 75% of qualifying families receive no assistance whatsoever. When formal systems fail, people turn to informal networks, but poverty exhausts entire family systems. Lorraine's daughter Jamie must save for an apartment to reunite with her son. When social workers suggest asking family for help, Lorraine's response captures reality. "Yes, I have family," and "No, they can't help." Religious institutions find themselves equally overwhelmed, their limited resources demanding impossible accountability. Public housing deterioration compounds these problems. Milwaukee has reduced public housing by 20% since 1991. The result is devastating mathematics. Milwaukee's poor renting families typically spend 88% of their income on housing, leaving just $12 of every 100 for all other necessities. This creates impossible choices: rent versus medicine, housing versus food, stability versus survival. The affordable housing crisis stems from reversible policy choices. Britain and the Netherlands prove universal housing voucher programs work, ensuring no family pays more than 30% of income toward housing. A universal voucher program would transform American poverty. Evictions would plummet, homelessness would nearly disappear, and families could invest in food, education, and savings. Expanding vouchers to all renting families below the 30th percentile would cost $22.5 billion, far less than the $171 billion spent on homeowner tax benefits in 2008. Legal reforms could further protect tenants. New York pilot programs show legal representation in eviction cases dramatically improves outcomes. Sealing eviction records after a reasonable period would prevent a single crisis from permanently limiting opportunities. Most fundamentally, we must recognize housing as a basic human right. Our nation was founded on rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, each requiring stable housing. When we allow eviction to function as a business model, when we accept families spending 70-80% of income on housing, we betray our fundamental values. A different society is possible, where stable, affordable housing serves as the foundation for human flourishing.